Welcome, everyone, to the Screamcast episode 45. I'm your host, Sean DeRager, and with me, Brad Henderson. What's up, man?
Hello.
Are you okay?
I don't know what I'm supposed to say. You introduce me every time.
I don't know. You're supposed to say hello to our dear listeners.
Hello, dear listeners.
Hello, listeners.
I'm drinking Coffee Shop of Horrors.
Oh, God.
Coffee.
There you go. You're a jerk. Anyway, are you done? Are you done eating? Brad was shoving a sandwich in his mouth as we were getting ready to record. Are you ready to go here?
It was actually macaroni salad. Mm. And fuck you, Sean.
All right, fuck you very much. Today we are talking. We're talking a newer movie, which is kind of a change. Well, we talked Horns last time, but we're going to be talking the guest from Adam Wingard, who you may, most of you may know him from directing Your Next, a favorite of mine. So
is it?
It is. I love Your Next. You kidding me?
No, I'm just fucking with you. No, I loved Your Next as well.
Your Next is one of those movies that I would recommend to people, and then they would come in the next day and be like, "Yeah, so I watched Your Next last night, and I hated it." I don't understand who those people are.
Well, I mean, with Your Next, I mean, it's been out for a bit. I'm not going to do any spoilers, because our episodes are usually spoiler free.
Usually.
But no, I mean, I think it's mixed. Mainly, I think what really, really hurt Your Next, and even though it shouldn't have, was The Purge, because we already had Home Invasion with Masks, but people wanted to compare the two, and they're not even at all similar in whatsoever. Just because people wear masks doesn't mean, you know, you say Home Alone's a home invasion movie too, but, you know, there's fucking tons of home invasion movies.
Yeah, The Strangers.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing. I would compare The Strangers more to, because of the mask, how they look, more to Your Next than anything. Yeah. But whatever, people want to play dumb. And also the fact that Your Next was made in like 2011, and, you know, sadly we didn't get it until like August of 2013. But I was one of the lucky ones that saw it at Fantastic Fest in 2011, and I kept on trying to tell everybody about this goddamn movie, and no one really knew about it, and I was like, shit, when's this going to come out? But it got pushed back and pushed back constantly, and finally it was released.
Yeah, that's frustrating about movies. I was on Flickchart today during my break at work, not while I was working at all, I would not do that.
Yeah.
And I was trying to, like, get all the 2014 movies, you know, rated, or at least on there, so I can see what the movies I saw in 2014, and I get them on in some sort of list. And there was, like, so many movies from 2014 that I have never even heard of I don't think have gotten wide releases yet. It's ridiculous, the timing of movies.
Yeah, but, well, I mean, you usually always have to think the year that it says it's released on like IMDb or whatever, that's usually when it hit festivals, and then we get it the following year. But I mean, it happens. It just sucks that sometimes, you know, things like Your Next get so much buzz because, you know, it played as like a midnighter, like at Toronto, and then it played one time at Fantastic Fest, and then Lionsgate snatches it up, and then all these reviews, everything comes out, and then it just disappears.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that kind of sucked. Luckily, you know, sometimes when that happens, there's something that pops up online, a torrent or something, and then kills the film.
Yeah.
But luckily, nothing happened like that with Your Next. It got a wide, which got a wide release, which I was extremely happy about. Yeah. Very confused. Like, why is this film at my local theater? But mainly because, you know, there's no big stars in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Adam Wingard and Simon Barrett have done a few movies together, but this is, you know, everywhere. I mean, it's a marketable film, and that's why. I mean, they had a kick-ass trailer for it. So I was happy about that. Also, Lionsgate was behind it. But then Universal's behind The Guest, and it gets a super limited release.
Hmm.
And I don't know. I like both films, but I like The Guest a lot more on the sense of
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead. Cut me off, Sean. What were you going to say?
Go for it, man. I'm sorry.
No. I was just saying, it just seems like this film would be kind of, I don't know, word of mouth spread around quicker because it is kind of unique and different. You know, Your Next is kind of a fun throwback 80s horror film. You know, there's nothing really new to the mix. Mm-hmm. This is kind of really, really back and forth of an action film, a drama, a thriller. It has this huge horror element to mm-hmm. it. I don't know. I just think this film would generate more buzz in a wider audience, especially with Dan Stevens. He's a good looking dude, you know, yeah. And they throw him in the movie, this shirt off. And, you know, that's $1 million right there.
You know, what my wife said when he took his shirt off, see, look, he doesn't have abs. Like it's supposed to make me feel better, or he doesn't have like big ab muscles.
But the thing is, Dan, let's talk about Dan Stevens' body for a second. Well, number one, I remember Simon Barrett was, when he's at Fantastic Fest, he's a great storyteller, but he was telling a story about how when they filmed the movie, like he was very, very skinny when they started, and he did a big workout in order to get, and actually the last scene that they filmed in the movie is the shower scene because they wanted him to look the best. And the very first scene that they filmed was the gun sequence where he buys the guns from Ethan Embry.
Yeah.
Because he's super skinny. He progressively gets bigger. But I don't know. He's a good looking guy. He's got this great look, you know, to where he's very intimidating.
Yeah.
But he's also like that boy next door. Just a great mix, you know. And there's not too many actors that can portray that, you know, to fit into that role, to have that look, to be so charismatic, but also be so sinister at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to dive into that more, but we almost skipped over the Blu-ray announcements, and we have a little bit that happened before we're recording here, so let's jump into that real quick.
A little bit happened.
Do you like what you see?
I love what I see.
Would you like to touch what you see?
Yes, I would.
All right, so Blu-ray announcements. There hasn't been a whole lot this week at the time of recording here, but Arrow Video did drop some new
knowledge.
Titles. Dropping some knowledge. Now, all of you, if you've been following, you know that Mark of the Devil, Blind Woman's Curse, and Day of Anger are already set to be released for the Arrow US. And Brad, do you have a list in front of you?
You did.
I'm gonna keep on. I'm gonna cool. Okay, so I'll go here, and you can comment on these movies because you have probably have seen them, and I probably have not.
I think I've seen all but one.
Okay. So along with those three, let's see here. They also announced that on the 31st of March.
Get your glasses on.
No, I'm trying to see the dates here. It's all I did something weird on the site where the words ran together. So Mark of the Devil comes out March 17th, Blind Woman's Curse comes out on the 24th of March, and Day of Anger on the 31st of March. So the titles that they released, three new titles for Arrow US, was Massacre Gun.
Didn't see it, that's the one.
Okay, Blood and Black Lace.
Mario Bava, yes, I've seen that, it's good.
And The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Miss Osborne, which I'm intrigued by the title already.
I didn't see it. Didn't they announce Coffee?
Coffee's Arrow UK only.
Mother. Oh, I get UK anyway, but okay. Yeah, Coffee's the one actually I'm most excited about, so fuck you.
I mean, even though the Arrow is coming to the US, it's still, I mean, I always tell everybody when I'm talking about getting a Blu-ray player, and you guys turned me on to, I credit you and Brian for turning me on to the Region Free stuff.
Turn you on. Yes.
Turn me on. But getting a region free player, even though I got a kind of one that's kind of a piece of crap, it doesn't work for everything. It's opened the door to like so many other movies that are just unavailable in the US and are region locked. So, Arrow's going to be releasing US stuff, but there's going to be stuff that they just can't get distribution rights for because someone else is, holding on to the US distribution rights. So yeah. So that's it. That's the Blu-ray announcement I have.
Basically, the most important part of this conversation is that Coffee is going to be on Blu-ray.
Yes.
Because they've already released Foxy Brown.
Yeah, that's going to be
fun. Now we have Coffee, and now we need Oshiba Baby, and we get that trilogy of Pam Grier, and we'll be all right.
Dude, I'm all down for that. Even if it's region locked, get yourself a Blu-ray or a region for the Blu-ray. I can't fucking talk right now.
Jesus Christ. Just say Pam Grier and HD.
Pam Grier and HD. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking about. I'm getting all tongue-tied.
I'd get more than tongue-tied. This is the end of your rotten life, you motherfucking dope pusher. That's my Coffee impersonation.
And also, we haven't talked about this on the show, mainly because Brad has something against Fred Olen Ray, but he just released Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers on Blu-ray, a special signed edition. He sent 300 to Amazon. Those sold out in like an hour, and then he has 700 more signed on the way to Amazon that should be showing up, but I don't know how long those are going to last. And then he'll have another 1,000 of unsigned Blu-rays available. So, Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers out on Blu-ray if you're a fan of the film. And there's a lot of people that are fans of the film. This sold out quick.
Dude.
You know, so.
If it wasn't limited, that shit wouldn't have sold.
Oh, man.
Like, I honestly, like, you know, I don't have any personal vendetta, like against Fred Olen Ray, but dude, his movies, like, there's, like, the thing is that no one likes Fred Olen Ray until Blu-ray comes out, and then everybody's like, oh, Fred Olen Ray is so good. Where were you, like, you know, 20 years ago when Fred Olen Ray was making movies? No, like, I mean, there's a certain films that he's done that people really like. And, like, I kind of get the, like, Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers, I give a free pass. But, like, people going apeshit, like, 1,000's going to sell out. Dude, 1,000's not selling out in some of these Scorpion titles, let alone a fucking Fred Olen Ray movie.
Well, I think he'll sell, like, out the signed ones and then whatever's left, you know.
1,000?
I don't know. I may have the numbers wrong, but, I mean, I know that he had more to send that were still signed. And then he said there's going to be more that are unsigned. So maybe it's 500. I don't know. I could be wrong, but I don't have it all in front of me, but. Anyway,
I don't know, man. That seems a little bit of a stretch.
He's he's working on Scalps.
Oh,
and then, dude. Which I think 88 Films is releasing too. And
yeah,
then,
that's something I don't understand because that movie alone is, like, I usually don't do worst lists, but Scouts is definitely one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my entire life.
Wow.
That's crazy. You know, it's funny.
The cover art of Scalps is awesome.
Yeah, it's good.
The poster is awesome.
Yeah, no, it is.
I've never seen the movie, so.
Yeah. Dude, no, but that's the thing, is like, you know, it's one of those things that, I mean, I'm glad they are on Blu-ray. I'm not hitting against that. But, like, this, like fan shit that comes with it that, like, stick up for the film, no, it sucked when it came out before. It sucked on VHS. It sucked on DVD, and it's going to suck on Blu-ray.
You know,
You buy it and you like it, that's fine. I don't have a problem with you buying it. I'll probably end up getting it too because I want to support that and I want more films. But don't go on telling me that it's a fucking good movie because it's not.
Right. Right. And you know what? I don't think people are seeing that it's a good movie. It's one of those
Oh, no.
I have not seen Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers, so I do not know if it's good or bad. And there's certain movies, like, there's like a fine line with bad movies. Like, there's enjoyably bad and then there's just awful. And it's a fine line.
I don't believe
line,
in
so
that.
We'll
either
see.
You like a movie or you don't.
Well, no,
he's got Evil Tunes. You know, he's got Evil Tunes. It's okay. You know, Alienator is a really dumb, stupid movie that's kind of fun.
Well, yeah. You're saying dumb, stupid, but fun. But there's like a fine line, like, between just dumb. You know what I mean? And it's finding that line that, you know, that's where, you know, that's a bit tough. So.
Well, I tell you what, you do me a favor. You watch Alien Dead, and then you tell me something different. That's one of his movies.
Okay.
You watch Alien Dead, and then you come to me, and you tell me that Fred Olen Ray's cool. And you're gonna say nope. Because dude, oh, man, like the dude has directed kids movies, porno.
Mm-hmm.
Like I remember, like what was like some bikini airway movie, like on you know Skinamax or whatever it was. You know, he's done, you know, old school, like throwback films. He goes by different names all the time because he's embarrassed probably.
Oh, I noticed that when I was looking at his IMDb, he definitely goes by, depending on the, like type of film that it is.
Yeah, no, dude, he does like 10 That's movies funny. A year. He's like the Mike of fucking like the U.S. over here. But you know, he doesn't go by his own name. And it's just like, I mean, I just don't get it. I mean,
maybe we should have him on and you can ask him all these questions.
No, no,
no,
no, no, no, no.
I think it could be an entertaining conversation.
Well, I don't want to fucking offend the guy. I mean,
I know. You're classier than that.
I've seen a lot of his movies. I'm not telling anybody not to watch them because I'm like, I just have this thing where I've seen stuff from the 80s until like the late 90s of Fred Olen Ray. And I can't believe I'm watching. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Fair enough.
But that's just me.
Yeah.
I don't want people to say, oh yeah, Brad from fucking Screamcast hates Fred Olen Ray, so I'm not going to get... No, give it the time of day, because who knows? You might like it. This is just one filmmaker that I don't care for.
And that's fine. I think we all have those filmmakers that, you know, either you like it or you don't, or you get it or you don't, or whatever, and that's fine.
Well,
it's all good.
It's just... I don't... This is another mean thing. He just doesn't have any... I'll just say this. He doesn't have any finesse behind his vision. It's just very sloppy, and you know, even though we have directors that churn movies out, you know, like Mike in Japan, that dude's done like 5 movies a year.
Mm-hmm.
Not insane, all of his movies are great, but some of them are really, really good, and he's got a great vision. I mean, right. You can see that from, you know, the stuff that he's done now with, you know, the remake of Harakiri, you know, 13 Assassins, Over Your Dead Body. You know, he's got all this really good shit, and he's like almost a prolific filmmaker at this point. But he started off really, really small. But even though his movies are small, they still look good. Now, with, you know, because I know that you and I had a conversation through text message where you mentioned, you know, the kind of – you put – Fred Olen Ray, and then you talked about, like, you know, Jim Warnowski's films are
right.
But see, he has a certain image and he has a certain thing with his films that don't steep or don't overflow in this vat of shit that that other people do. I mean, now some of his movies aren't great, like Camel Spiders. No, not good. But he's done, you know, Not of This Earth and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, Chopping Mall. Like, even though Chopping Mall's goofy, it still looks good.
Mm-hmm. And that soundtrack, you know, man. That soundtrack kicks so much ass.
He still put a lot of time and effort, as, you know, with the budget that he has and as crazy as he is,
mm-hmm.
he actually puts out a quality product. Not all of his movies, but most of his movies. Fred Olen Ray, on the other hand, puts out, like, half a quality product, like, once a century, and then that's it.
Well, it'll be interesting when I finally see this, and I don't think I've seen any of his movies. I may have seen part of Evil Toons, and that's about it. And I don't think it left a lasting impression other than the box art. But anyway, enough of that. I don't want to bring that up. If you're a fan of Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers, it's sold out of Amazon right now, but it will be back in stock if you're wanting to pick that up. So that's all I was going to say. And, you know,
I love you, Fred Olen Ray.
And I got to give credit to a filmmaker taking control of his product and, you know, whether
because
or not.
Because no one else will release it.
That's just right. But still, he's doing it. And this was a success for him. And, you know, you got to at least, you know, give the guy credit for giving it a try. A lot of directors won't even give it a shot. But, you know, you got to I think you got to give him some credit where credit's due there. I can't judge his films yet because, like I said, I haven't seen any of his
films
yet.
You're gonna be fucking singing a different tune.
I could be.
You're gonna eat your words. I'm gonna replay this podcast every fucking day. Give credit where credit's due.
And talking about being like independently on his own, releasing his own stuff to Blu-ray and remastering it. That's what I can respect. I don't have a gauge on his movies yet, so we'll see what happens.
I'm glad he's still out. I'm still glad he's turning out movies. He's doing what he loves. More power to him. I just don't care for his movies.
Well, there you go. That's totally fair. All right. Speaking of nothing. Let's. I don't know what I'm talking about.
You get drunk and drunk each more and more each show.
I'm not drinking at all. I've had coffee and water.
I'm the one that's been drinking.
Let's dive in to a full discussion of Adam Wingard's The Guest.
Can I help you?
Mrs. Peterson?
Yes?
My name is David. Mrs. Peterson, I knew your son, Caleb. I was with him when he died. That's me.
You know Caleb?
Yes, ma'am. We're pretty close.
Yes, ma'am.
He wanted me to tell you that he loved you.
Thanks.
He asked me to check on y'all. And so, we're gonna be good friends.
Do a fight with some guys at school.
I'll teach him some self-defense when he's feeling up to it.
Well, what are you gonna do?
Nothing bad. For the damages. Never let anyone pick on you. Here, you keep it. Miss Peterson, are you sure you're comfortable with me staying here?
I think it could be a good thing for us.
You know, I promised Caleb I would do anything I could to help your family.
Now, this one kind of flew under my radar until near the end of last year, and for some reason, I was going to ask you, did this get a full-on theatrical release, or was this kind of more festival run and then like a VOD release?
Well, it played like at South by Southwest like back in March.
Okay.
Of last year, and you know it hit festivals pretty big. I saw it at Fantastic Fest, but even when I saw it at Fantastic Fest, it was already released theatrically. But as far as it making, like, it was an extremely limited release. I just want to say maybe under 30 screens. That's what I think. I don't think it got any bigger than that, because I searched like 150 miles like in Florida and I couldn't find one. So I'm pretty sure it was very, very small. And that's the odd thing, that, you know, every company, Universal, Lionsgate, you know, Fox, Dimension, they all have their big label, and then they have their small one where they do smaller films, independent films. But even though it's picked up by Universal, you think that this would be bigger, you know? It just seems like this movie would make, like, if they promoted it, did, you know, a big campaign, a few million dollars, kind of like how they did You're Next, they would at least make something back. But this kind of, theatrically, it didn't really get released theatrically, in my opinion, because it's like 20 screens. It's like a test.
Yeah.
Unless it was more than, I don't know. I'd never researched how many screens it was, but I know it wasn't a lot.
Yeah.
And then it hits up, you know, the VOD and, you know, Blu-ray, and I've heard people talk about it. You know, it's getting decent reviews, but I haven't heard anybody talk shit about it.
Right.
I haven't heard anybody say anything negative. So because I don't see anything in this film personally that I could, like, I would pick apart. Like, this was my number two of last year. Number one being The Treatment, which isn't even a horror film. But, you know, this was my number two. Just because films like this, films that Adam Wingard and Simon Barrett are making. Simon Barrett's the writer, Adam Wingard's the director. But, like, you know, they had A Horrible Way to Die. You know, they've done a couple other really, really independent movies together, like Auto Erotica and I think What Fun We Were Having that weren't released, like, yet. Because I don't think they don't create enough buzz, and I don't think anybody's interested in like, you know, streaming those. I don't know. That's what I haven't heard. They're the greatest. It's kind of like, you know, they did it on a weekend. But anyways, aside to the point, they did A Horrible Way to Die, which is great. You know, and of course You're Next, and then The Guest. So right now they have three big feature films that they've done together, and all three have this. I don't know. Like, Adam Wingard knows how to blend this, and Simon as well. They know how to blend this very, very comedic aspect in with these tense action sequences, as well as just having this overbearing horror element. Now, even though You're Next is kind of like a horror film, but it's not. It's a home invasion movie. Like, it's not what you think it is, like, once it all starts to unfold, because – you know, the trailer, people are in fucking animal mask, and the, you know, the trailer is like the animals will come out to play. Well, yeah, but once you actually find out what's going on and what's, you know, like what's happening in the movie, and once they get in the house, you're kind of like, this isn't really that much of a horror film. It's kind of like a, you know, an action home invasion.
Yeah. Thing. Yeah. No, it definitely goes the route of action more than horror, I think.
Yeah, and the same thing with A Horrible Way to Die, and you know, big time with The Guest. These films, they're very like low key action, low key horror, and like have just this very witty, comical sense about them. And yeah. I found myself laughing. And You're Next more than anything.
Yeah,
and it's just, and I know that kind of. You're Next. It felt like. Have you ever been to like any film festival, Sean?
No, I have not. I'm hoping that changes this year.
It better. but there's a thing that people say at festivals is that it feels like a festival film, and usually when they say that, it's kind of like an audience participation, stuff like that. Like, it kind of gets the audience going. When I saw You're Next, that's exactly what that movie was, and. Personally, I kind of predicted the outcome of that movie because I went to go see it. I loved it. It got like a fucking standing ovation. Like, people just kept on talking about it. No one said anything bad about it. It was just, you know, kind of our perfect movie of Fantastic Fest in 2011. Well, but, you know, reflecting back on that, you know, you have Ty West, you have Simon Barrett in it. You have Joe Swanberg, Amy Simons, you know, A.J. Bowen, Barbara Crampton. You just have kind of all these horror people, all these filmmakers.
Yeah.
You know, even Calvin Reeder, he plays the cop at the end of the movie. And, you know, they have that underground film, you know, conversation. And there's just a lot of things that it's really made for people that really like movies.
Right.
And know these guys. That, like, part of that was like that. You know, and I really enjoyed that, but I was like, man, I don't know if people are going to get this. Like, I don't know if this is actually like, because I went to go see it at the theater when it was released August, like 2013 or whatever. And I'm sitting in the theater, and the theater's packed. All right. No one is fucking laughing.
Wow.
And I'm like, either Florida's really, really dumb, which it is, or they're just not like, I don't think they're grasping that part. Like, You're Next is more of a bumbling comedy than it is a horror film. It's more of an action movie than it is a horror film. Like, it's the last thing I think it is a horror film half the time. But, like, you know, even just the sequence where, like, one of my favorite lines and favorite moments is that when Joe Swanberg has the arrow, like, in his shoulder, and, you know, he says, try to call. And then, you know, Felix, one of the brothers, says, you know, oh, I can't get a signal. Maybe they have a cell phone jammer. And then Joe Swanberg says, fuck you, Felix, you fucking lowlife. And I crack up, but I would like Janice like nudged me. She was like, "You need to be quiet." I'm like, "Okay, well, this is supposed to be funny." I remember watching this in the theater and cracking up, and the audience was laughing. But I don't know. I just think that it's one of those films that's made for particular people, and people just don't like. Kind of the majority of the audience just doesn't get. And I'm hoping that The Guest isn't like that, because The Guest is really fucking funny at times.
Yeah, well,
you know, it has that same comedy and that same pacing and that perfect timing. But I don't know if people are going to get that.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
So what, I'm anxious to see.
I'm not sure what people are expecting with The Guest. I mean, the plot setup is this family who's just kind of getting over mourning the death of their son, who's obviously in the military. A young man comes to their house and says he's a friend of their son's and is able to kind of convince them that he's their friend. But something is not what it seems. And that's pretty much, that's all I knew going into the movie. And, I had a blast with it. And like you said, like, I mean, I watched this with my wife, and the same kind of thing. Like, I was cracking up certain moments and she just was not cracking up at all. I don't know if it's, I think like these movies and kind of how they operate is they're written by these guys who've seen a lot of these types of movies and genre. They're interested in genre and kind of turning it on its head. So there's a lot of nods to other movies we've seen, and there's certain character interactions that I think maybe hit people like us a little differently. But, what I was interested in, has Simon Bear written all three of these? Yes, he has.
Yeah.
So each of these movies they like to explore kind of the more of the dark nature of somebody, but also how that person can kind of turn it around and be very likable. Which each of these movies, I feel like, Horrible Way to Die for sure. You're Next a little bit, but The Guest. You know, you like the lead character, like Dan Stevens.
Same thing with Frankenfish, because like Frankenfish, Frankenfish is supposed to be a terrifying, like Frankenfish, but you actually end up liking him. You know, I'm just kidding.
I haven't seen Frankenfish. Okay.
I always message Simon. I'm like, dude, don't forget Frankenfish.
Nice.
But that's like one of his very first like sci-fi movies he did.
I've actually been wanting to watch it, but I've never gotten around to it.
Watch Dead Birds. His movie Dead Birds is pretty good.
It's great. It's It's marred by I have a thing with bad CGI that takes me out of the movie, and there's some bad CGI in it. But for the most part, Dead Birds is fantastic.
You're the worst.
I know I am.
If the movie's good, you can like. There's a thing. There's a fine line when a movie has bad CGI. Ugh. If the movie's good, you can totally overlook that.
The Mist has some bad
Outlander.
CGI. Outlander has some bad
Outlander
CGI.
Is.
But yeah. I like
movies are
movies.
So good that you can totally look past that.
Yeah,
like you got to give things a break, Sean. Not everybody has $300 million budget.
I know. I'm telling you, Dead Birds works. The thing is, Dead Birds works despite the bad CGI. But I noticed it, and in each of those movies, I noticed the bad CGI. But everything else is so good, you know, that I, you know, it gets a pass. It gets a pass. No, Outlander's
good. Thank God.
Outlander's fantastic, and one of my favorite movies. And The Mist is great. So, but
watch The Mist in black and white if you got a problem with the CGI. Sean.
Okay. I need
it
to.
Actually works better.
I'm gonna do that. That's this October. That's my plan. I'm gonna
watch October. What the fuck?
I line up all my horror movies that I'm gonna watch in October. Anyway, so
nerd.
So 31 days of Halloween. Heck yeah.
31 days of horror.
I say Halloween. So Dan Stevens. So he's like we were talking about it. You know, earlier before we got to the Blu-ray announcements, was he can turn on a dime, and there's a moment in the movie where he does that in one scene. He goes in and out of that, and it's fantastic. It's
what are you talking about?
Dan Stevens,
I'm trying to picture like what part are you like when he just like has the switch?
Yeah, I'm trying not to. You know, I don't want to give
Don't give it anything away.
But you know, it's right there in the synopsis where there's something, he's not everything that you think he's going to be.
Right, right. No, there's a couple moments where you can kind of get into his head for a second, or you might, you know, you want a picture of what he's actually thinking, and it's probably not good.
Right.
You know,
but then his interactions with the characters, and then, you really, really get to like him, especially, there's a scene where there's a family, they have a daughter who's, in her 20s, they have a teenage son, and then it's the mom and dad, and he takes the son, with him into a bar to kind of, you know, see these bullies or whatever, but then through that interaction, you're like, this guy's, you really like him a lot, even when things can go a little darker, you still are kind of pulling for this character that, you know, well, maybe it's not as bad as it seems, you know, maybe there is some good in him. And to have that for me go throughout the entire movie with this character, I think is a credit to his acting that, I don't know. I just really liked him. What else has he been in? I haven't, really looked into this.
Well, I mean, he's been in that popular show Downton Abbey.
Oh, okay. Downton Abbey.
Okay.
Boring show.
You know, I know he's been in a lot of TV, but like, honestly, I don't know of anything else that I've seen him. Oh, he's in A Walk Among the Tombstones. That's newer. He plays, let me plug A Walk Among the Tombstones here for a second. Walk Among the Tombstones is kind of a sequel to a movie in the 80s. Of course, Walk Among the Tombstones is based on off a book, a novel called Walk Among the Tombstones. Well, the same writer wrote a book called 8 Million Ways to Die, and that movie was made in the 80s, and it was a complete bomb. It's nowhere to be found, basically. Hal Ashby directed it. Know anybody Hal Ashby is? He, you know, directed Harold and Maude. He directed Being There, Shampoo, that Jack Nicholson movie. He wears like the sailor cap. Whatever it is, I can't think of the name of it.
Oh, I know you're talking about. I can't.
You know, such a prolific filmmaker that makes this, and then he does 8 Million Ways to Die, which, you know, is adapted, you know, this book that was written by, I can't remember, I'm drawing blanks on everything. But anyways, the screenplay was written by Oliver Stone. And, you know, it stars, you know, Jeff Bridges, Andy Garcia, Rosanna Arquette, Adrian Paul, or Alexandra Paul. I always say Adrian Paul, fucking Highlander, you know, Alexandra Paul. So like, you know, it's got this like kick-ass cast. It has all these cool people behind it. Well, in the movie, like fucking Hal Ashby got pissed at Oliver Stone, basically threw out the script and then was like, "Hey, everybody improv the rest of this movie and we're just going to wing it." And that's exactly what it is.
Wow.
And it's just this complete fucking train wreck. Well, anyways, this character that Jeff Bridges plays, Scudder, and, you know, Liam Neeson actually portrays that character, Matt Scudder, in Walk Among the Tombstones. So if you can find 8 Million Ways to Die, it's only been released on VHS. I think it's had a DVD release overseas, but that's a movie that they wanted to bury. You know, it bombed really, really bad. No one wanted to be a part of it anymore. Oliver Stone tried to have his name taken off.
Wow.
It was just a complete disaster. It's actually fun to watch because you can see the disaster happening. You can tell that they're improvising because, like, they'll get in an argument, and it's actually really funny. Like, you know, there's a scene where Andy and Garcia and Jeff Bridges are eating snow cones. Like, Andy Garcia is badass, and so he, like, you know, hunts down Scudder, and he pops the trunk, and he's got snow cone maker. So he makes snow cones, and they're having an argument while they're eating snow cones. But, like, when they're actually having the conversation, you know, it's kind of like, oh, yeah? Yeah. Well, you know what? I'm going to get you, man. And it's like, whoa.
Do they forcibly bite into their snow cones angrily bite into the snow cones?
Yeah, no. When they bite, like, is that movie bite snow cone where people, like, it's a hard piece of ice and people are cracking it?
Right.
Which, you know, I've never had a snow cone like that. And if I do, it's a bad snow cone. They're supposed to be soft. I don't want to hurt my teeth. My teeth are going to get cold. I don't want to bite into ice. But, yeah, they're like an apple. Like, it's not even a fucking snow cone. It's like an apple. Anyways, 8 million ways to die. Track it down.
Oh man,
the unofficial sequel, Walk Among the Tombstones. And to answer your question, Dan Stevens in another movie.
Wow, boom. wow, rabbit hole. So if you're skip taking three and go rent or buy Walk Among the Tombstones is what I'm hearing, and I picked it up, so I'm excited to watch it. So,
but you know, we talked about Dan Stevens for a little bit, but let's talk about Micaiah Monroe for a second.
Yeah.
She is cute.
Totally, yeah. She's great. What
she is, I don't know. This is like, she is by far one of my new favorite things. She is such a beautiful woman, and she like, she's so good too.
Yeah,
and
fantastic.
She's and I know I mentioned on the past couple podcasts, and you know, a movie that's kind of getting buzzed. Oh, man, I hope it blows up in March. But it's called It Follows, and she's in this. It's about a It Follows is a movie about something that's I don't want to give anything away because it's very, very cool what the
it's
story
about
is.
But something that follows something. It follows.
There's a certain thing that you can get, and you are plagued by a demon.
Hmm.
And there's only one way to get rid of it, and it haunts you, and it follows, and it goes wherever you go, and you can't let it touch you, or you're fucked.
Nice. I'm hearing good things about it.
Yeah, she's the lead in that, and she is so good, and she is so good at this. Like, you know, she as far as like, I heard that she's like kind of like a professional like wakeboarder or something, or she does like kite surfing, I think it's called, something like that. And then she just like jumped into filmmaking, and I think it's pretty cool. But she portrays this role. So does like everybody in this movie is perfect almost. Yeah. Like even to the point of you know, because AJ Bowen pops up there for a second, that's pretty funny. But you know, you have
Shit, was that him?
Yeah, he plays kind of like the correspondent guy that talks to Lance Reddick's Major Carver.
Oh my gosh.
Lance Reddick, because
he's barely in it though, right?
Yeah, he's just a little bit. But okay. I mean, we have Ethan Embry in this movie. Uh-huh. We have fucking Joel David Moore, which those guys that you've seen in movies before, you know, that are more or less on the, you know, kind of the indie popular side. Mm-hmm. But I mean, everybody in this movie just nails every single moment. The kids, Dan Stevens, the parents, and I just thought Leland Orser, who plays the dad, mm-hmm. is just fucking great.
I just
like how he can like just completely turn and just kind of be kind of an asshole. And he's been around for so long. It's kind of nice seeing him get you know, some credit a little bit, even though this film isn't huge. But I mean, he's been in fucking Carpenter movies. He dates back until the fucking early 90s being in movies.
Yeah.
And you know, he's a familiar face.
Yeah, totally.
You know, so when he pops up, you'll know. But I think a lot of it has to deal with the writing too. Like everything is perfectly timed. Yeah. Everything's perfectly timed in this movie. Like the jokes, the action, like I don't know, I can't think of a perfect, like, this is a perfect date movie too. Like if you want your girl to drop her panties on a date night, you pop in the guest.
I don't know.
No. Trust me. Just because your wife didn't like it, Janice is ready to roll.
Wow,
for this movie.
Damn.
It's a sexy movie.
Yeah.
Even without that, like, it has everything you want. It has comedy, it has action, it has horror, it has good looking people, it has kind of a cool story. Mm-hmm. And the soundtrack is fucking phenomenal. Like, it's, oh god damn it. I've not said phenomenal on fucking like 10 episodes and there it goes. But anyways, you know, and it's actually really funny. The guy that did the music. His name is, I believe, Steve Moore. And if you haven't checked out there's this band called Zombie. It's Zombi, and he's actually the lead in this band. And if you watch the movie, there's kind of two homages to your next. Well, when they're at the party, someone has the wolf mask on, and that's actually Steve Moore. He did the soundtrack to this movie, the original soundtrack, and he's also in this band, kind of this throwback like giallo synthesizer band called Zombie. It's really, really good. And then when Goblin, all our listeners should know who Goblin is. When Goblin went on tour, they kind of went on two separate tours. Claudio Simonetti, who kind of runs Goblin, went on his tour. And then the other guys kind of continued a tour without Simonetti. Well, Steve Moore actually stepped in for Claudio Simonetti and toured with Goblin, which is fucking badass. I actually got to see them in St. Pete, and Steve Moore was actually the stand-in, but everybody else was original. But it was just a great show. It sucks that I couldn't see Simonetti because I've never seen him live. But the soundtrack is just so good.
Yeah, the score, like, and then they also choose to do. They're really good about kind of choosing songs that flow with.
Yeah,
the score.
They have that new. They have that new wave kind of.
Yeah,
because that new wave stuff's coming back, and especially like even the soundtrack in Drive that Cliff Martinez did. He did this exact same thing, picking songs. Well, I don't know if he picked them per se, but as far as the filmmakers picking songs that. Really flowed with that soundtrack that Cliff Martinez did. It's just all around good.
Yeah.
So it's the same kind of music that's in Drive, and we have that now. And there's a movie coming out that we'll have on the podcast. We're going to talk on the podcast called Starry Eyes. Mm-hmm. Same exact thing, man. The soundtrack is just so good, and it's just something that you just the big selling point to this movie was kind of the soundtrack. When they were promoting it, they were putting the soundtrack for free if you would pre-order it or whatever like that.
I didn't get one. It's, man.
Sucks. I'm pretty sure you can still get it.
You can actually. There's a couple playlists on Spotify where people have found all the songs and put them all on a playlist. So I've been actually rocking that the past 2 days at work.
I bet you have, Sean.
I have, man. I have.
But yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's not too often that we get a movie, because I mean every year we have our favorite movies. You know, like Blue Ruin was one of my favorite was my favorite movie of 2013. Mm-hmm. Blue Ruin, it's a good story. It's presented well. It has great acting. We talked about that on the podcast. My number one last year was a movie from Belgium called The Treatment. It was about a cop who dives into the world of pedophilia, who he's after these people making these tapes. Of children, and it's just a really dark and sinister movie. It's not too often you get movies like The Guest where you just have a good time. Like there's no sense of nervousness or, sadness or drama. It's just a good time with you. It's like almost like a buddy movie, Like we have buddy comedies like with like Mel Gibson and Danny Glover, but this is just like, this is like a party movie. It really is.
That's funny. Well, you and I both have had different reactions to the film. The one thing I wanted to talk about, and it's to the film's, I think, to the actor's credit and the script's credit, is it deals with like a sense of loss. Like these parents have lost a son, and then this guy kind of comes in almost as a surrogate for their son in a way, and that's why they're so, I think, quick to accept him in. And personally, I've been through that with my wife, lost her brother, about 8 years ago. So we have kind of that backstory in our own personal lives that we kind of saw in the movie that they did. I think that they brought it through very well where it definitely,
you just fart?
No, I hear like the dog scratching at the door. But it definitely like struck a chord, I think, especially with my wife, and like just seeing how the parents are dealing with the loss of their son. And in this movie, it's still fresh. So when you see the dad, he's always like, "Hey, do you want to get a drink? You want to have a drink? I need a drink." They're dealing with this overall grief in their lives. And then, so then this guy, David comes into life, and you can, for us, we understood why they would accept him in. And for us, it was a little less of kind of a buddy comedy or fun movie because there was that underlying, I think, hurt that we both could relate to. And my wife more than me. So it was like, when the movie ended, it was just a different, there's more melancholy, I think, than wasn't that great? It just kind of brought up a whole slew of kind of memories. So, but I saw that as to say that I think that not many actors and directors and writers, can fully bring, that to the screen. And I think that everyone was kind of firing on all cylinders, and it's underlying in the film. But, the fact that we were able to kind of connect with it was, I think, a positive thing. And I think that's Simon and Adam should be, proud that their movie kind of operates on two levels. You know what I mean? There's the action movie, there's the thriller, but then there also is some subtext on people dealing with like loss and grief. So it's funny. Like, so when you say party movie, I'm like, oh man, I would never bust this out at a party.
You just brought me down. No, yeah, I really do. Like, I'm actually hosting an all day movie marathon this Saturday. I do it quite frequently, and I have a pretty good turnout. We have between 8 to maybe 13 people sometimes.
Nice.
And, I always try to pick the last movie to be something that really keeps people awake. And a few marathons ago, I picked Your Next, and that went over really well. So I'm definitely putting this last because I don't know, I understand all movies affect people different ways.
Right.
Put it that way. Yeah. Like with me, I don't know. I've never had a movie really affect me, I guess, because I'm always in kind of the perspective that I'm watching a movie. I don't know. It never strikes those chords to the point of being, oh shit, like this happened to me or this,
And for the most part, I'm the same way.
Yeah, but I could see that. But for me, this is a party movie. Like, you have people over, you have your buddies over, and you watch this shit, and by God, you're going to have a good time.
Yeah, it definitely reminded me of kind of more 80s and early 90s type movies. These types of, these types of kind of thrillers, you know what I mean? I don't know, Sleeping with the Enemy and things like that where... that I don't think there's a whole lot of movies like this right now.
There's not a lot of movies like this at all.
Yeah, but fresh.
That's the thing you have these filmmakers doing something that's really different and, kind of unique to the point of putting these movies to the kind of what we grew up with, mm-hmm.
Your
ages, 25 to the 40, maybe even a little bit older. You kind of grew up with these films of, like the 80s throwback.
Yeah.
That's what we feel. But it also has this complete new spin to it as well.
Yeah, it's familiar, but it's also fresh.
Yeah, mm-hmm. They're not repeating history or anything like that. Like it's completely new. But it's just, I don't know, man. It's just a unique vision, I think, and it's just it takes a lot of talent in order to pull this off and to have movies like this, I think.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But
it's great. I definitely recommend it. I think out of the movies these guys have done, I think it's my favorite film, and I think it's actually the easiest for me to recommend. I was going to recommend this to a dude at work who I know this would be like right up his alley. And this is almost the first movie that I could recommend to this guy. So
what is he like?
Well, I don't know. He's kind of a weird, like he likes a lot of things. Like he likes Dr. Giggles.
I love Dr. Giggles.
He actually asked me about Dr. Giggles and I was like, oh, and actually I hadn't seen it yet, which is weird. But then he also likes, The Thing, Kurt Russell movies and stuff like that. So,
sounds like a cool guy.
Knowing that
he'd be available for the podcast.
Why? You want to step down or something? Are you done? But see, his movies stop with those more mainstream stuff. This is like the first thing I can probably recommend him that he hasn't heard of.
Yeah. You know, another thing that's fun about this movie, and I want to dive in to a little bit more of what who this David character is. Like, there's just so much underlying, like, kind of the iconic killer in this movie. The same thing as we have Jason, we have Chucky, we have Pinhead. He kind of takes that, and he kind of becomes that villain that we want to see continue.
Yeah.
Throughout this film, it was actually funny because there was a guy that I follow on Twitter, and I've seen the movie about 3 or 4 times, and the third, because I actually watched it like 2 nights back to back. I watched it when I first got it because we were going to be talking about it, and then I knew that Janice wouldn't be able to make the thing that I'm hosting on Saturday, so I said, I want you to see this movie because I think you'd really like it. So then I watched it again. And it's funny because my friend, but acquaintance on Twitter, his name's Freddie Squires. He's like Freddie in space. Is a webs. But he actually said what I was actually thinking is that Dan Stevens' character David is fucking Michael Myers through and through. Like, he has kind of that jumpsuit look. There's that, there's a few homages. I mean, there's huge homages to Halloween 3 in this movie, which, I'd like to talk about for a second, too.
Yeah.
Awesome. Because, there's a huge thing with the score. Like, whenever there's a cut and a transition, like, there's that Halloween 3, whoa. And I really like that with the music. And of course, even in the trailer, you can see that when he steps into a building that's something's going on, you can see the 3 masks from Halloween 3 in the background.
I saw the movie. I was like, see, look at that's Halloween 3. Look at those masks. And my wife was like, can we just keep watching this?
Party movie.
Anyways, there's a lot of Easter eggs.
He's, but he actually does portray that that sinister, like, stalker killer. And maybe he is.
Yeah, but you really like him. Like, it's like,
yeah, that's the
you
thing.
Know, it's but, just so weird.
But like, you want to see, but it, that, that's the thing with Jason and Michael Myers. We didn't go to those movies because of plots. We wanted to see them continue their slaying.
Yeah. No,
that's
but
the
I,
whole
I,
point.
Yeah, but I think the guest operates on a whole other level than.
No, it does. Yeah. It takes all those elements of seeing the slasher, but it also makes these likable villains. I mean, likable villains that we've had through our course of movies. I mean, like Christopher Waltz as the Jew Hunter in Glorious Bastards. Mm-hmm. That guy is fucking slaughtering people, but you want to see him continue to kill people.
Yeah.
You want to see it. The same thing as Anthony Hopkins as Hannibal Lecter. Even though he's this fucking serial killer, he's just fun to watch. He's just fun to listen to. I think another guy that can take on those roles is There Will Be Blood and Gangs of New York with Daniel Day-Lewis' characters, like Bill the Butcher. Like, this guy is fucking sinister, but he's just so good. Like, what is this guy doing this weekend?
right.
And I want to hang out with him. Maybe we can go to a bar and he can protect me.
Exactly.
And I'm going to be a badass for the weekend.
Yeah, he can save my ass.
like Javier Bardem in No Country for Old Men when he plays Anton Sugar. Like, he's such a badass and we're so fucking scared of him, but we just can't stop watching.
Yeah.
And it's not very, I said, it takes a lot for a kid, for an actor to run both roles because they're playing the good guy and they're playing the bad guy. Even though they're supposed to be a bad guy, they're playing that good guy to the point of where you just want to see him succeed. There's a movie called Sleep Tight. It was by one of the guys that did REC. Louis Tozar plays kind of the building superintendent. He's just a fucking nasty guy. He's bad, but we just can't stop watching to see what he does next. We want to see him get through whatever he's going to do, even though we shouldn't. It almost makes you question your own fucking sanity sometimes because you're like, why am I rooting for the bad guy? Why do we like the Joker so much in Dark Knight? Why is Heath Ledger so badass? Why do we finally want to see the Joker kill Batman? Why do we not want to see, you know, the Joker die? It's just because these actors can take these roles and just turn it, like, it's almost like they claim it's their own. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine what that would be like for a filmmaker, is, you know, for having, you know, like Simon Barrett writes this character. Like, he wants him to be kind of likable. He wants them to continue. But then, like, Dan Stephen comes in and he's like, okay, I get it. And then he just knocks it out of the park.
And he's British too.
What does that have to do with anything?
Because he has that good old boy accent, you know what I mean? Like Texas, you know.
Oh,
I mean?
yeah, totally.
That's what I mean. He's totally engulfed in this character. Like he does, you know, it's I just looked down, I saw he was born in, you know, in the UK, and I was like, oh my gosh, because I had no idea.
Well, he has that southern thing. He talks like out of the side of his mouth. Yeah. Like he always has like this sarcastic look. I'm actually trying to do it right now as I'm talking to the mic. But he has a sarcastic look that he does. And he just like the way his hair looks, his eyes, like everything. Like not to get spoiler free, there's just this sequence where they're in the principal's office. Mm-hmm. And the conversation that happens, unfolds, actually is the whole reason why this character is awesome.
Yes.
Because what is said in that office is just – and how it progresses, mm-hmm, is that this is the guy that you want to become friends with, because this guy is going to get you out of everything.
Yeah, he's like five steps ahead of everyone. Almost at all times.
And it's funny to see how this kind of originated, where this bad guy is the good guy, where even though no matter how bad this person is, you know, we still like him. And mm-hmm, this dates back to fucking Frankenstein with the monster. You know, we have the monster in Frankenstein who is very bad. Like he'll kill people, you know, he'll go on fucking, he'll just lose his mind and just start strangling people. You know, he kills fucking Igor and shit. Spoiler alert.
Spoil Frankenstein, jerk.
Yeah, 1931. I just spoiled it. But anyways, you know, we have that character where we feel for him. You know, we feel for Frankenstein's monster. You know, he doesn't know what he is. He's never been down that route. He's put in this world that he's unfamiliar with. And, you know, we do see a side of the monster, you know, especially when he meets the little girl. You know, at first we're scared. We don't know how this guy is going to react towards this little person. And it turns out, you know, Frankenstein's monster is cool with this shit.
Yeah.
And it's just that scene alone does that whole transition to where no matter how bad this guy is, like, we kind of like him. And it almost turns out that the fucking good people are the bad guys. You know, and it's kind of how those roles and those tables turn with films like this. And, you know, I have, like to say, it dates back to probably, you know, the original Frankenstein movie, back to the novel, to where we actually care about the bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's actually a cool way to watch a movie. Not that I want to see it all the time. I think it's a unique thing. But when it happens, I really, really dig it, you know?
Yeah, well, and you want it to be, like, well done. Like, I think a lot of people attempt this, but they're not 100% successful. And that's where this movie stands apart from the other ones, where it's blending genres, but it also gives us somebody like 100% that we're 100% invested in, kind of no matter what he does. Like, we're interested in where he's going to go next, what he's going to do. And you almost want to make excuses, you know, for why he acts a certain way. I know that there's a couple scenes where I was like, you know, oh no, it can't be that, you know, where I was in my head making excuses. Well, you know, that's why he had to do that, or that's why that happened. But yeah, I mean, it's fantastic. I would highly recommend The Guest to anyone.
You should recommend it to the guy at work.
I'm going to tomorrow. He's gonna ask me every Friday. So what's coming out? What should I watch? so anyway, I got There's like, so we can just keep on going and going, I think, talking about Dan Stevens, but
well, let's talk about Dan Stevens for a second.
Let's talk about
Dan Stevens. Well, it was another thing that I thought was, you know, I mentioned the guy that wrote the article on Michael Myers, but there was also another one that was really, really fun, is by my friend BJ. She runs a website, Day of the Woman, and she also writes for Icons of Fright, and she wrote a few articles. She's a great writer, hands down. But she wrote this article, I think it's on Icons of Fright, she posted it the other day, but imagine if you just Google the guest Blu-ray and then Jerry Dandridge. Jerry Dandridge is Chris Sarandon's character in Fright Night, and she hit it spot on. Like, I didn't even put this together, but all credit to her, because in the film in Fright Night, even though we have Charlie, who we feel for, we just can't stop looking at Jerry Dandridge. We're like, I'd let you in, you know?
Yeah.
That's how you're not supposed to get a vampire to come in your fucking house. You don't invite him. But when Chris Sarandon pops up and he smiles, just kind of like Dan Stevens had a fucking machete at my doorstep.
Uh-huh.
And I answered the door, be like, hello? And he would be like, can I come in? And just that smirk look and be like, yeah, sure, come in.
Hey there, Brad.
Are you hiding from somebody? No, I'm here to kill you.
Mind if I come in and just chop off your face?
Cool, man. Cool, man. Let's just talk about it, you know? Tell me how you're going to kill me. Are you going to smile when you're going to do it? But anyways, you know, it's the same thing. It's like, you know, she hit it spot on with kind of like that's another one of the likable villains that I would throw in that category. You know, BJ hit it straight on, is that, you know, we have just Dan Stevens as this Jerry Dandridge. Just, you look at him and you just want to be him, you know? Like, that's part of the movie too, is like, I wonder what it would be like to be David from The Guest. Like, wow. How awesome would that be?
Well, because he's such he's a badass. He obviously has military training.
Yeah, you're a badass. You're super charming. And you just it just in the first 5 minutes, you know how the movie's going to go. Because when you're watching the movie, it honestly, like, after the first 5 minutes happen, even like, yeah, I would say 5 minutes, you're sitting there and be like, is this, am I halfway into the movie? Like, what? Why is this movie moving so fast? But that's just his character, you know? You know, he invites, and then he's part of your family in 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
It's so good. And very big props to Simon Barrett and Adam Wingard for taking something like that and making it just so believable.
Yeah.
So if you don't see The Guest, you're fucking stupid. if you don't like The Guest, tell us. I would like to know why, because I honestly haven't met anybody that hasn't liked it yet.
Yeah.
But I don't know. This is just a perfect date movie. You're going to get laid. It's a perfect party movie. You'll make friends. And if you watch it by yourself, you'll masturbate. So, like, there's just a win-win all the way around.
Wow. All right. Wow. Excuse me. Sorry. Oh, my God. Let me make a note here.
Of what?
Freaking clearing my throat like a...
Oh, yeah, you can leave it in there. That shows you're nervous.
Like I've been smoking for 30 years.
No, because you know what you want to do right now is you want to pull out that Blu-ray and you want to slide it in that DVD player. Mm-hmm. And you want to watch Michael Monroe and Dan Stevens, and you want to see that shower scene.
Okay.
Don't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do.
And she's super cute in those freaking, like, skull, the stockings that she has.
Yeah.
Oof.
Yep, she...
She's a cutie pie. Yep. Good actress, too.
Great. So, like, I wanted to bring up her real quick, too. Like, I like that she... Because a lot of actresses, they try to kind of use their sexuality a little bit to kind of make their mark on a film or whatever. But with her, like, she played it straight. She played within character, and she didn't have to do that. Where she's just a strong actress, and she doesn't have to flaunt anything. She
because
just shows up.
She dresses
up and,
very, very sexy.
Yeah.
In this movie. Like, even when she's in her waitress outfit, she's like, man, I would fucking stay at that diner all goddamn day. But, you know, even when she, like, they go to that party and she has that short mini skirt on, with that skull, like, that tank top, even though she is dressed like that, and it's a Halloween party, so it's justified. But she's not, like, you know, I don't know, you're kind of just looking at her face and looking at how cute she is rather than even looking at her body about how she's dressed.
But she's
she just kind of draws you in, you know?
Yeah, and she's a strong character. You know, she's I like it when there are, like, you know, James Cameron films are known for their strong female characters. I mean, she doesn't turn into a total badass or whatever, you know, but she is a strong woman character that doesn't have to flaunt her sexuality to get her way or anything. She's just it's a fantastic performance, and I think a great character. And I always kind of hat tip a director and writer who know how to write a strong woman into the film. And not have her, and right in here, she's like in Star Trek Into Darkness, when that one character just all of a sudden ends up in her underwear for no reason. You know what I mean?
Star Trek.
That's the first thing that came to mind.
Fuck is Star Trek?
Because someone had just brought that up the other day, kind of being a cheap way to kind of get teenage boys to like Star Trek. You know what I mean? What I'm saying is she doesn't have
it's funny because they actually exploit Dan Stevens way, way more than they do
exactly,
her.
Exactly, yes.
You know? And you know, it's funny because with a movie like this, you know, with horror and action, a lot of it's geared towards males, you know, even though it sucks because there's plenty of women and plenty of ladies that love horror films and I embrace it. And I think there needs to be more women filmmakers as well, but that's a whole different topic.
Right.
But anyways, it's funny like how they actually focus more on that. And I actually enjoy that. Because it's given something for ladies, and it's kind of pulling back on the men a little bit.
Yeah,
you know, because I like how it's equal. Like we just see her and she's, you know, just super cute, and you know, and you're right. And kind of the same thing happens in It Follows. She's very, very pretty, but we focus more, like we're just so drawn into her character that we kind of like lose touch of like what she looks like, or, you know, cause she's such a good actress. You know, we really believe this girl exists and she's just the girl next door.
Yeah.
And this is the same thing with the guest. And I was hoping that she would, you know, it was almost like you want her to have more screen time as well. But, I don't know. Like I said, countless times, everything in this movie is just, it's near perfect. If it's not perfect.
I'm hoping that this is a movie that really launches her career, Micah Monroe, and then Dan Stevenson's career into the stratosphere, because these two are fantastic together. They work well together, but you're like, they're on the map for me now anyway. You know, I want to see more things that they're in for sure because of this movie. So, well, I think we need to start wrapping up the conversation, man.
Last week, we didn't think we'd have enough to talk about.
I know. Last week we talked about three movies. Today it's only one movie. But the Blu-ray, just want to touch base real quick. It has a question and answer with Dan Stevens, and it also has a commentary with Adam and Simon with some deleted scenes. I haven't had a chance to dive into all those, but
the actual deleted scenes are pretty sweet. And then also, there's a deleted scene of Zeke's bedroom, and then also with Anna as well.
Okay.
There's actually, you know, we talk about that, but watch the deleted. I think you'll find out why they're deleted. But anyways, whatever.
No, I think it's worth picking up. I mean, I would definitely recommend you someone buy this, or at least stream it. You know, check it out. Tell your friends, for sure.
Invite him over for a party.
Party.
A sexy party.
All right. Well, next week, hopefully, we're going to be talking to Richard Griffin. That was going to be this week, but that fell through with some scheduling issues. So we're working on that for next week. He's the director of Disco Exorcist. None of that. What are the other movies he's directed?
He's done Splatter Disco, Exhumed, The Creature from Hellbilly Lagoon. He's got a couple movies out called, and a new one called Sins of Dracula, Future Justice. He, you know, it's funny because we talked, you know, I wanted to talk about the guest and I wanted to talk about his movies because he does something the same, just on a very, 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 very small $5 budget. And, you know, it's funny seeing these films transition of people that actually have a budget to do it versus when they don't. So I think it'd be an interesting conversation, but we'll have to continue this later.
We will. That'll be good. It'll give me some time to actually. I've only seen none of that, and it didn't go over very well with me. So I'm hoping that I'll get a chance to watch Disco Exorcist and then a couple more to kind of get a feeling for him as a director, because I think he's one of those guys, right? I think he has his own voice. But you kind of have to, there's a little bit of, you got to get used to it a little bit. You got to, you know, like the first time you had whiskey, you know what I mean? It was kind of rough, but then, you know, a couple years later, you're a whiskey connoisseur, you know what I'm saying? Right?
I guess.
I don't know. you have to build up a tolerance? That's the wrong thing to say. But I'm excited to, wow. I'm excited to dig into this.
This conversation's over.
So, also, we're working on a sponsorship with Coffee Shop of Horrors. I know I've been kind of talking about them and drinking their coffee
plugging
and stuff.
It every 2 seconds.
Yeah, but the good thing out of this is we're hoping to be able to offer you guys a little bit of a discount when you order, when you guys order. All that's kind of being worked out, and then I'll be hopefully having enough samples coming my way to offer them in giveaways. We're going to start up a contest.
Can't speak either.
I can't speak. We're going to be doing some contests starting hopefully of February. So I'll have some free coffee to give away and stuff like that. So it's kind of cool.
And movies.
So stay tuned for that in the next few weeks. We want to thank oneofus.net, of course, for hosting the show, and nerdly.co.uk for posting our show over on their site, and Wolfman of Mars for providing the music, and their new album comes out in a couple months. I'm super stoked for their album.
Their album's called The Screamcast, right?
No. I'm hoping that at least they'll put us in the liner notes. Hopefully, that'd be awesome.
It's liner. I always thought it was liner.
It's probably liner. I say things wrong.
Well,
all
you
the time.
Probably know what you're talking about. I was just saying that's what I always thought it was. So
yeah. Well, I'm thinking Linnea Quigley. So
Linnea.
God damn it. In the Linnea Quigley notes. All right. Mm-hmm. That's enough. Anything else? Anything else you have to say? Or are we good to go?
Well, let's talk about the shower scene with Dan Stevens.
What? He's a sexy man. All right. Well, with all that, all of you have a great week. Drop us a line over at thescreamcast.com or on Twitter or Facebook.
Yeah. Yeah. Please, actually talk to us, because, like we've said in the past, we've got a great response, even better and better. And, we're trying to do a whole thing with the kind of, maybe you might not see it with the show, but we're trying to take it a different direction a little bit, and I hope you dig that. If you dig it, let us know. If you want to see something different, you let us know too. We are always open for opinions, and I don't know about Sean, but I like constructive criticism.
Constructive criticism, not asshole criticism.
Well,
if you're gonna be an asshole, you can fuck off.
Whoa!
All I gotta say.
Oh, Sean,
you know who you are. You know who you are. All right. And with that, you guys have a great week. Talk to you next time.
See ya. Bye. That's funny.
Oh, don't tell me you're leaving. The party's just begun.
Sounds good. I'm eating.
Oh, dude, don't be one of some of the eats on the podcast.
I'm not going to eat while we're recording.
I hate when people eat on the podcast. You know what I'm saying? What happened?
What the fuck?
I don't know.
What happened? It just said I was put on hold. Is it better now? Hello? Better?
No, you sound like a robot.
God damn it. Let me grab my coffee. Hold on.
Oh, yeah, Coffee Shop of Horrors. I'm drinking blah, blah, blah.